oh, this is going to go swimmingly.
So all of a sudden, none of us realize that there's nothing to talk about. and 1 to at least 50% of us is feeling really ill.
Yeah.
So that's good.
I like that you had to count to get to that. You're at 1 to at least 50%.
I'm going to be honest with you. I was busy looking at other things and I couldn't remember who had said they were ill and who had said.
It's possible we're just too old to be doing things this late at night.
Oh, well, yeah, there is that.
When we did settle on 8:30, I did have a sort of slightly mild panic.
So which of us are going to be the first to doze off?
Exactly.
Right. So are we going to talk about stuff?
Stuff.
Everybody who is even vaguely affiliated with Oxygen United at the moment is talking in some capacity about communication. And there's kind of lots of earnest chat and hand-wringing kind of apologetic chat and robust responses. And yeah, it's just the hot topic. I think it's quite interesting to kind of just have a look back at how a football club communicates with its supporters has changed even in the kind of the last 20 years, 30 years, because it's wildly different. And I think social media has been a pretty rich place for Oxygen United content in the last kind of 10 to 15 years. But I just think it's really interesting to have a look at how the whole kind of picture has changed. And so there's lots of kind of focus on what the club is or isn't doing or should or shouldn't be doing from a communications perspective. But what a club should do is changing like year on year. And it is completely different every single time. They've got to constantly evolve. Even what it did 5 years ago would look silly and out of date now. And I just think so it's quite interesting to look back at some of the kind of weird ways we found out about Oxygen United stuff. So I'm going to start with my content. So I think this is a good place to start. So there's a thing called the Internet Archive called the Wayback Machine, which is really, really interesting.
I thought you were going to start with saying there's a thing called the Internet. I thought it was going to be a little...
Yeah, that's starting a little early, I think.
A gentleman called Tim Berners-Lee. So the Internet Archive is, like, so basically it's been taking snapshots of websites from, like, you know, the dawn of time. So you can look back at really, really old versions of the Oxygen United website. A lot of it's really fascinating. So you can watch, for example, you can read through the process of Per Oscar Sam taking over the football club and then the development of the new stadium. Earlier on, I stumbled across the webpage where they announced that the city council had agreed the deal with Kassam to build the Kassam stadium. And you can chart the building of the stadium and all of the excitement surrounding around that. Reading it through the current lens feels really, really strange and it's really weird. But one of the reasons why I wanted to bring it up is one of the earliest kind of snapshots of the Oxygen United website was from June 2000. And they've got this kind of latest news from the Manor in sort of really, really bad old internet text. They start talking about contract negotiations. And I absolutely love the level of disclosure that they go to in this, which you absolutely would not get now. And I think this is a good place to start because it has that kind of look at how things were different back then to how they are now. So I'm going to read a couple of bits of it. So again, so this is kind of June 2000. It's talking about Les Robinson moving on to Mansfield Town. It explains that he's turned down the offer of a contract, again, which is something that is rarely spoken about. But then it starts going into this stuff, which is great. It says, Robinson's departure now means that manager Dennis Smith not only has to find a new right back, he also has to find a new club captain as well. Smith has already got a replacement lined up, but like so many of the deals on the table, he is waiting for the player to return from holiday before he can find out if he has been successful. And then it goes into some really, really mad details. Like with Davis having already turned down terms offered, Jamie Cook and Rob Folland informing Dennis this morning that they would sign if the terms are right, but are not going to sign the deals currently offered to them. And Dennis still waiting on the decisions of Phil Whelan and Mark Watson. It could be a very different team to the one that finished the season at Millwall.
Is that on the official website?
That is the official Oxygen United website.
I suppose back then it was kind of written by traditionally trained journalists. So these stories did have lots of detail. A couple of years ago, I bought a program from the first ever game I went to, which I don't remember because I was only three at the time. But it was in 1975, and I found the program. The level of detail in that, you know, it was like everything from, you know, it was like there'd be a news story that they're servicing the turnstiles next Tuesday, or, you know, that they've changed a brand of coffee in the snack bar and stuff like that. It was packed full of that kind of information. So I guess when you get to the early days of the internet, although I remember Oxford having a presence of some kind back in the kind of late 90s, that's when I first came across the internet. The first thing I looked for was an Oxford United page, and we definitely had one. But the people contributing to it were trained in this kind of more long-form journalistic style. And like you say, you just wouldn't do it nowadays. Or you just wouldn't be able to extract the information out of the comms teams.
I understand why it is the case. I'm actually working communications as well, so kind of like... That kind of reputation management thing is absolutely paramount to everything. But everything in football now has been overmanaged in that perspective. And this is not a criticism of Oxford. It's just the way the entire world works now. Everything that reaches the general public is so super, super sanitized. And just something has caught, I think it caught your
yeah,
eye.
Yeah, it did, Read yeah. out what you've caught it's from a Match report.
It's Wednesday, the 2nd of February, 2000.
I quite like the line, regardless of 5 minutes into the second half came the first of referee Alan Butler's baffling and appalling decisions. It's a really unbiased view there, I think. Michael Appleton's shot sailed over the bar with no Oxford boot or a glove of Paul London anywhere near the ball.
The ball never even changed path, but the referee awarded Preston a corner. Why not have a go on the quiz match? It is completely free and good fun, so click here or register to play, and good luck.
Oh, does that work?
No, it doesn't. Oh.
I like that it has to make a point of saying that this is good fun. This will be good fun.
Yeah, because if something tells me it's going to be fun, I'm definitely not going to enjoy it.
No. Whereas now they would do that with a fun emoji.
They would.
Well, I'm not sure what the fun emoji would be. Probably a bicep.
I think it's all biceps, isn't it?
The club's initial presence on Twitter was OUFC Live, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that was the Twitter handle.
Yeah,
and it was very much just a. It was just. I mean, it's just Chris Williams and Martin Brodetsky bouncing around different places.
Well, of course, the account was as you say, OUFC Live, which then everybody shortened to Clive.
Yeah.
And Clive was this character in itself.
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember when they changed it, which was to the sort of Daryl Eales period, and people were outraged. It's like they killed Clive. Yeah. Really, really upset by it. But I think there was I think people had a point there, because it was our kind of, it was like our digital fan, it's like a friend of the fans, and Twitter was really good at that point around that sort of thing. And I think you're right, it was driven by Chris Williams and Martin Brodetsky's slightly irreverent ways. And you're saying about the early tweets that I think their first tweet was something like, "Is this live?" But I don't think it's there anymore. It's clear, presumably not corporate enough. There is, though, I did look up. In 2009, the club sent a tweet saying, "Sorry for not tweeting for 2 weeks. We promised to tweet every day." And then they didn't tweet again for 8 days.
I mean, you know, they don't go 8 minutes now without tweeting a picture of the players training. And
even back then, so that's 2014 when they changed from Clive to OUFC official. Although it's probably more professional, and I think it was probably explained at the time as being more professional, just the club progressively taking themselves far too seriously and wanting to be this sort of different persona. And Clive was much more authentic, I suppose, and that's what people liked about it. Plus, it was a smaller online fan community as well, so there wasn't quite as many, there weren't the trolls around, and it wasn't, yeah, it was a more pleasant place to be. So
youngsters.
but interestingly, going back to the thing about the change from Clive to OUFC official, because that was kind of aligned with Eels and Ashton, and probably I'm going to say probably Ashton more than Eels, because he's quite the kind of corporate slick executive, isn't he? So I think it's kind of part of his thing. But whilst that kind of was, I fully agree with all the points about how it kind of slightly edited the personality out of it. That then did follow, 18 months or 2 years or whatever it was, of Sarah Gooding doing the social media content, which was probably the most kind of outrageously enthusiastic kind of content and kind of personality-based content that you could probably get. And to the point where she was, you know, she was actively having conversations as her using the Oxford United account with football supporters. And whilst that kind of format probably wouldn't work nowadays, even though it was only kind of sort of 7-8 years ago, it was insanely popular with quite a big chunk of Oxford United supporters.
Well, I was going to say, because she was a Birmingham City fan, wasn't she, in real life? And so, and a proper Birmingham City fan from her personal account. I know there was a lot of stuff that she'd gone all over Europe following them, and she understood that kind of lifestyle, I suppose. And she threw herself into it. When she left, I wrote something on the blog about her, just a bit of a kind of tribute, because I thought she was great. And I thought, you know, there's been really nobody better. And there was quite a lot, it was sort of like a Chris Williams departure type thing, as, oh, what have the club done to her? And I sort of made a point, I think, in the blog about, you know, people get to the end of a job and they need to do something different. And she sort of direct messaged me and just kind of said, yeah, thanks. Because basically she'd run herself ragged for however long she was there for. It was like 18 months or something, 2 years maybe. And she was, like you say, she was answering tweets at God knows what time at night. There was one particular game. It was a Tuesday night, and she organised a kind of mailing to the season ticket holders just to say thank you for coming.
Yeah.
And it made a massive difference. And she'd obviously kind of put that after the game, you know, it was a Tuesday night, so the game finishes at 9:30, close to 10 o'clock, and then she's doing that. And yeah, I think it was a sort of 24/7 job for her, really, which is probably not wise on a personal level, but no. It did really show.
And I think it, absolutely right. And I think it became quite clear towards the end of her tenure there that kind of, I think she'd probably thrown, I'm sure she would probably admit this as well, but she threw probably too much of herself into it. And she was actually really quite personally invested in it, as you would do when you take something that you're doing as seriously as she did. But I think kind of the blur that, because she was doing it 24/7, it was blurring into her personal life. Well, so that's how it seemed. And so I think, yeah, it was inevitable that no human being could sustain that for that amount of time. But and so then what followed that, and it was actually Daryl Eales made a Tim Williams style comment of saying, I don't think we should communicate quite as much as we have been. And I think his point was that on social media, we've probably gone a bit too far and we want to rein it back in again. But then what followed is that they installed somebody who just went, right, let's do a very, very, very basic service of just providing updates and news when it was there. And that went down like a sack of shit, really. Like it went down really, really badly amongst supporters. No disrespect to whoever it was that was actually doing it. They were doing as they were asked to by the senior managers at the football club. But it went down really, really badly. But then Kath came in and did a really good job after that. And she kind of got the balance really well, I thought. But
do you think it's important that we know who that person is? Because we all knew who Sarah was and we all knew who Kath was. Does that make a difference? Do you think that's important? If it's just someone sort of faceless and nameless, who maybe isn't particularly connected to the club?
I don't know. I think it helps. And I think with like Chris Williams, for example, Martin Bradetsky doing kind of program bits and pieces and stuff as well, it helps for me in terms of supporting a club, which, you know, I don't know how much everybody wants to support a big football club, but it sounds dreadful to me. I support Oxford United. I kind of want, and I really value that kind of connection and kind of knowing who people are around, just through osmosis. You, everybody's got a story about kind of, you know, Chris Williams or Martin Bradetsky or whoever that somebody who grew up with them, or you know somebody who went to school with that person. And I quite like that. And I think we don't have that at the moment with kind of some of those parts of the club. That doesn't mean to say that it's wrong not to do that, but I think it's something that's missing, and I kind of quite like being able to have that kind of connection.
No, it gives it more of a personality, doesn't it? I think, and
I think the thing that's really missing, and the thing that makes that difference, and we've talked about it before at games, is that clubs are at their best when they're funny. Their communication is at their best, and I mean that in the broadest possible sense, whether it's Grimsby Town fans having blow up fishes in the stands, or I think Richie was saying when we talked about it about Bristol City were the first to do goal gifts.
Yeah, they were.
The players acting up and I think deliberately or by accident, the early days of Clive in itself was an in-joke, wasn't it? You know, that was we knew who Clive was, we knew where it came from. But if you said to somebody else, oh yeah, our Twitter account's called Clive, people literally referred to him as Clive.
Yeah.
And then we threw that away. And I think that's really lacking now, is this just lack of humour and lack of, well, it's authenticity fundamentally.
Yeah.
You know, it's so slick now. Yeah.
I don't think it's always humour. I think, because I think one of the best things that ever came out of the Oxford United Twitter account, and this must have been Sarah, was when we signed Kemar Roof.
Yeah.
Like when we properly signed him. And do you remember she just tweeted a picture of his fingers doing the finger put and coming soon? And everyone just lost their fucking minds over that. You know, we were not expecting him to come back. And I don't think it was until the following day that they actually announced that we'd signed him. But they released that sort of late afternoon, and everyone went absolutely berserk. It was brilliant. It was genius. And it was just such a simple thing, just a picture of a man's fingers. Yeah. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't any flash design. It wasn't funny. It was just what we needed. It was perfect. It was really, really good.
Yeah.
I just got a sort of shiver just thinking about that. It's just, it's absolutely perfect. Yeah, yeah. Just to remember that and to think how spontaneous that felt compared to what is now very much a sort of day by day leading to the game. You know what post is coming next. You know what emoji is coming next. The attempts to inject humour into the social media accounts recently have kind of involved really weird stuff, like someone dressed as the Grinch at the club, at the training ground, and trying to embarrass players. And what's your favourite chocolate bar? And look, if you notice, all that stopped, and the players quite rightly probably turn around and go, "Can we just get on with our jobs, please?" There's mics, camera, and microphone stuck in our faces every time we leave the dressing room with some banal question.
What I always really liked about those is kind of the dual bind that Cameron Brannigan found himself in with those, because he really has no kind of truck with any of that kind of whatsoever. But he also takes his role and his responsibilities as a footballer really seriously. Mm. So he both answers them, but really doesn't want to be answering them as he goes striding past. And I just love watching. And I kind of do miss them, because I like watching how all of the different players respond to them. Some of them are like a bit of banter between them and their mates. Some of them just head down, just like grunt a single syllable as they walk past.
Yeah. No, they're all into bloody twirls, weren't they?
And that's one of the other problems as well, is when you're asking footballers to demonstrate, you know, kind of their personality. Footballers don't have personality. I mean, you know, you get the odd gazer here and there. Yeah, footballers are inherently quite boring creatures. Some of them are not. I mean, clearly people like Ruben Rodriguez and you know, Sparky Harris have got a bit of kind of personality about them, but a lot of them are really quite dull.
Well, I was gonna say, because the chocolate discussion, I did spend a bit of time writing it down.
Of course.
Because footballers are sad. So Mark Harris's chocolate was Kinder Bueno.
Oh, he must have small children. Because no adult is choosing Kinder Bueno otherwise, are they? Is it the one that's shaped like a hippo?
coming into training. No, my favourite Sarah Gooding moment was that we were playing at the Kassam, we were attacking the fence end, there was a shot from somebody and it ballooned over the fence and into the car park and bounced into the car park. Ooh. Somebody caught the ball and Sarah Gooding shot out the side gate. Oh, I don't know why she did, but anyway, she shot out the side gate to retrieve the ball. And I was watching all of this from the south stand upper. The bloke panicked and jumped in his car with the ball. And she just went and stood by the door and just stood and stared in for 5 or 6 minutes. He was obviously sat there with a football. She was just sat there, just she wasn't going to move. And eventually the door kind of opened and the ball popped out. And she just took it and walked off.
Brilliant. Yeah, I remember seeing her run off after him. Yeah.
That is one thing that if when we move away from the Kassam Stadium, that is one thing I will miss, is when you've got a really boring game, watching what's going on out in a car park. Like, even if it's just watching a bunch of knobheads being chased down the road by the police on horseback, it does at least provide some kind of diversion.
Well, there were some nice horses in the car park on Saturday. Ooh. That whiled away a few, you know, most of the first half.
And, you know, and it really needed it on Saturday, didn't it? I mean, maybe you don't want to talk about that because that's topical content. Topical content. That's when you want horses in the car park. It's a real horses in the car park kind of game.
But there is definitely a link to modern communication, or today's communications, because I didn't hear anyone communicate that the Blue Emergency Light Day was basic subject to the first military coup on British soil since the 17th century.
Yeah.
I mean, what happened there? It just turned into military. I mean, I can only think that they've tried to bring the themed days together, and that is going to be our military day as well. Talk about tone deaf. Not a single person from those blue light services were in the actual ground. No. And then to have Scott, you have a brass band, but and the Daft Punk medley was good, to be fair, but then to have, you know, the Union Jacks and the national anthem, I mean, you know, just I just found it weird and disrespectful to the people who we were supposed to be celebrating that day, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Completely agree with all of that. I that was my thought, that it was hugely disrespectful. And it went from blue light, blue light, blue light, to suddenly people with public services. That's a different thing.
Yeah. You
just suddenly change it. The only thing I can think of is that most of the blue light brigade have got actual jobs and they were busy.
Yeah, they actually are, so they couldn't
so they had to pad it out somehow. So
yeah,
they, in all the sea cadets.
Just thinking through the rationale and the thought process, I do actually think that's probably it, is that they're thinking, well, we can get two fire engines and an ambulance. That's not going to fill up much space at all. What can we do? Oh, the army are wasting a massive truck and 18 guns. So
what are the bomb squad doing?
Yeah, exactly.
This weekend.
So I think, yeah.
Well, that equipment works, does it? So you just wheel it in. And...
Yeah.
And also, and this is a slight aside, but that day was sandwiched between International Women's Day and Mother's Day, and they managed to have a man from the army on blue light bring out the ball. It feels like they've missed a lot of tricks there.
Yeah. They're not, they've never been that great at kind of the... pitching the tone of those kinds of things quite right, have they?
Do you remember the last time they tried to do something, trying to find the right language here, female orientated, was the Her Game 2 day, and it was, the idea was that, you know, once a year we're allowed to have female musicians songs play on the PA, but they still insisted on having the usual turgid songs, you know, in the lead up to the kickoff. So you had just, and one of them was Chelsea Dagger by the Fratellis, and Fratellis literally translates as the brothers.
Yeah.
I maintain that song is the worst thing that's ever happened to football.
Out of humanity.
That
Depeche Mode song, I think it said to Scott, Martin Gore in a leather skirt doesn't count. And it's just, you know, again, just this tone deafness. So what starts off as a good idea just ends up spiraling into this unwieldy sort of nebulous mishmash of ideas, and it just becomes this mess.
Well, I did think on Her Game 2, they, I don't know which ex-player it was that did the 50-50 draw, but they could have had one of the old women's team players come back to do it.
Or one of the current women's
team.
To come and do it.
There's a lot of women.
There were so many opportunities that day, wasn't there? There was the fact that the two children's teams that lined up as the players entered the pitch were, I think there was one, we noticed there was one girl Scott out the two teams.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But the thing about the music on Her Game 2 day, what made it worse for us is in the North Stand, because I contributed, because, you know, there's lots of really, really good music by female artists, so I contributed a load, and I did my research and all the ones that I thought would sound really good in the stadium, and the volume was really low, and I couldn't hear any of them until the intro music by Men came on, and they ratcheted the volume up.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
I mean, is there any need for these days at all? Does anybody actually want them?
Just talking about just kind of going back, bringing it back to kind of social media things. I've been blocked by a lot of Oxford fans.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Like, quite a lot of the time, not even really intentionally.
No, I got blocked a lot when sort of towards the end of Chris Wilder's time in charge, because I sort of went off him, and I was told I was very ungrateful. I was told once, I think.
Well, it's nice of Chris to personally reply to your tweets, though.
I've been blocked by... Yeah, it's mainly because I just sort of had an opinion.
An awful lot of a certain type of football supporter on social media doesn't like a woman to have an opinion about football too loudly.
And this is kind of the ugly side of it, isn't it? I think there's a lot of good things about social media in football. I mean, the fact that we're all sitting here today.
Yeah.
Indeed.
You know, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, we met via Twitter, so that's good. I'm so sorry. I was sincere. That's not, I genuinely didn't mean that. But
yeah, it was lovely. You know, I've made a lot of friends.
Yeah, but I've also had quite a lot of abuse.
Yeah,
because I once I went on and I said that I didn't really look forward to the Swindon matches because it kind of brings out all the morons. And to prove me wrong, all the morons came out. Decided to start berating me. And that was when I was told to keep my shitty ginger opinions to myself.
I just can't.
I do remember that incident. You know, obviously I was part of the pylon.
Yeah, absolutely. but luckily my skin is thicker than they are, so it was fine. And I do kind of wonder sometimes, as much as it's like the kind of the social side of it and having met a lot of people through Twitter, a lot of Oxford fans through Twitter, I do also sort of think that it's social media ruins football because I think expectations are higher now because people want bragging rights on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I think that things that are a big deal wouldn't be such a big deal if it wasn't for social media. When we were doing our team of the 2000s, somebody commented saying, oh, it was really nice to sort of think about a time when we all just went and we were rubbish and it didn't matter. I thought, it's true, isn't it? We, you know, not that it didn't matter, but it was, we were all kind of, nah, well, you know, sometimes we're good, sometimes we're rubbish. And that's, you know, at this level, that it will always be the case. That will forever be the case. But unfortunately, because of social media, there just seems to be more pressure to everything to be good and for everything to be perfect, including the Twitter accounts, the club's Twitter account, you know, which is really, I mean, we're as guilty of taking the piss out of it as anybody, but I just feel that it raises the expectations too much.
Yeah, I think there's quite a lot in that. And I think the it's that kind of yeah, there's a sense of urgency and the entire club and everybody associated with the club is immediately exposed to everybody's frustrations or joy or whatever from the match. And, you know, the worst time to speak to anybody in relation to football is immediately after they've lost a football match, which is obviously why the post-match interview with managers is always a complete car crash. Yeah, so I think there's kind of, the club's completely exposed to all of those really, really raw emotions. And also now with social media, the way it's so polarised and so angry and everything is a scene of outrage for some particular reason. It just makes it feel worse.
I'll tell you one of the things, just going on to, because we're sort of talking about the internet generally, but when I was trying to do a bit of research and scratch together some content for something to talk about, we did go onto YouTube just to see what I could find. One thing that did strike me about it in terms of the kind of one of the big positives is, if you look at the 2010 playoff final, the amount of fan created content of every aspect of that day, from being in the pub to the angles, multiple angles of Alfie Potter's goal, and just that collection of content. If you think back to the Milk Cup final, which obviously was a completely different time, you've got one angle in which you can see those goals from, and one edit of it, which is the ITV edit on the day. And there are some absolutely fantastic shots from all around the stadium, particularly the break from Rhys Day to Sam Deering and Alfie Potter, all the way up through until Potter puts it away. And it's, you know, from all sides of the ground. And that's, you know, it's just a kind of, it's an absolute goldmine of that kind of content. The other bit I was going to say about that is there was this burst of creativity around that time. And I found, do you remember a guy called U-Man?
Yes.
Yeah.
U-Man, because I'm a U's fan, and a true man, I don't give a damn, because the team we're playing yellow are the best, in the north, south, east and the west. I love to travel up Wolves County, because there's so much love for all your FC, from Dicker all the way up to Van Marie, there's one team that keeps the people happy.
On here,
time. The club did a vote as to which song, because both clubs could choose a song to be played before the final.
Yeah.
And our choices were, I think, My Oh My,
mm-hmm.
You Man, and maybe the guy with the guitar.
When Bully 86, we didn't have Jim Smith, Bullman or Simon Clist, but we still took the piss. And now it's 2010, and we can win again. This time we've got the beast, all of us we believe. Because 16th of May we'll sing together, we believe Chrissy Wilder is gonna lead us to 50 Bean Oval score. City. Now we want it more than ever. We'll support the youth forever. Wembley, soon be yellow. Wembley, soon be yellow. Yellow, yellow. Hey, hey, hey.
Most people had no idea what it was.
No.
Not a clue what it was. It fell so flat on its ass. It just, it was embarrassing. My favourite one was from DJ Kevlar, I think.
I'm standing here, I'm in my room, I'm rapping, rocking out Wembley tune. It won't be long, it won't be soon, it will be soon, it won't be long. I sit, I write my Wembley song. Oxford out of that Wembley, come run, come rock, come follow me. We're Oxford cheer, we're going out Wembley. Check 1, 2, 3, come follow me.
Was Kemar Roof, He Ain't Too Shabby. He ain't ever seen Downton Abbey.
and you man has the immortal line, break dancing up the Grenoble Road.
which we all do,
yeah. It's fantastic. I'm just gonna say this, you can cut it out. I'm also on the You Man single as well.
Are you?
Yeah, they put our commentary in from the playoff semi-final, and I got both the goals in the second leg. So yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was Beano.
Hey.
I thought you were going to announce yourself as you, man.
Oh, no, yeah. No.
Momentary panic.
Would have been quite the twist, wouldn't it?
That's one of your fake Twitter handles exposed, Andy.
Yeah.
What? This was you, Andy. I think. Didn't you announce that? Was it Oxford where had some keeper?
No.
Yeah.
I just wrote that down.
Tell that story.
Yeah, so I had... Stop scribbling.
Oh, sorry.
so I had a spoof parody account that I think some people probably figured was me, some people didn't, which was called OUFC Clive. So it was after the club had changed from OUSC Live to OUSC Official. A couple of years later, I created a spoof account, which with hindsight, I wasn't always doing it with the best of intentions. I was sometimes doing it to try and pretend I was the football club to make funny things happen. Which is why I eventually got banned. But as part of that, I used to generate graphics that were similar to the graphics that they would put up on screen to kind of make announcements. And I did one which was, we were away to like Accrington or something like that. I can't remember. And I did a graphic that said, breaking team news or something like that on the graphic. And then, on the tweet, it was like, due to an injury crisis or something like that, Accrington Stanley will be fielding a 15-year-old in goal named Steve Fudge. And I remember posting that on Saturday morning before the match, because it was an away game, and I went and got in the shower. And I got back to my phone, and it just buzzing. And it had completely taken off, and I can't remember what the exact numbers were, but it was thousands of retweets. People all up and down the country were retweeting it, and I know people who kind of live at the other end of the country were said, oh yeah, I saw that. And it actually made it onto, it made it onto kind of some of the national radio stations that they were talking about it. None of them, it was one of those songs where people like writing into Mark Chapman on Route 5 Live saying, apparently there's a 15-year-old playing for Accrington Stanley called Steve Fudge. You know, and they were like, I don't think that's actually true. But that was, I mean, singly the greatest moment of my life. Steve Fudge, though, what a legend.
It's a beautifully pitched thing, though, because you can imagine somebody saying, do you know what, back in 1976, Burnley played with a 15-year-old called Steve Fudge in goal.
Yeah.
And it, so it has a just a slight ounce of credibility about it. Kind of, so it gets through the radar, and then like you say, there's this moment of, hang on, a 15-year-old called Steve Fudge. Are you sure? So there's that. It's superbly pitched.
I think one of my favourite bits about it was not even the fudge part of it. It was the idea of a 15-year-old called Steve that tickled me the most. That was fun.
Guys, I really don't want to do this, but because I'm feeling pretty crappy and I've done this quiz, and I wondered if you wanted to squeeze it into this.
Yeah. Let's do it.
I'm going to need a wee first. I'm sorry. I can't quiz on a full bladder.
Yeah, you're right. Let's go on to the quiz.
Okay, so because my knowledge of memory is so bad of Oxford United, I volunteered to be the quiz master. And this is a two-part quiz based on two games. And I've imaginatively called it Anyone for Dennis.
Nice.
Get it right down. So we're talking about Dennis Smith's first game in charge on the 11th of September 1993. So he was appointed on the 10th of September 93, and this game was the very next day against his old club Bristol City, who he was sacked from in January that year. So could you tell me what you think the attendance for that game was? Oxford United versus Bristol City, 11th of September 1993. And the nearest correct answer gets first dibs on naming a player from the lineup that day. Right, so go on then, Andy. Tell me what you've put.
5,369.
Rosie?
I've put 5,839.
And Scott?
Well, from what I remember, the away end was quite full.
Yeah.
So I'm reckoned 7,973.
Well, the actual answer was 5,420. So, Andy, you were like literally 51 off.
Amazing.
Which is very impressive.
That is very impressive, especially as
however.
It was, yeah, it's very, very impressive, especially as it was 8 years before the first game that I can remember watching. So I've got to name a player from that squad. Oh, Christ.
I thought by going 93, I was on safe ground.
Oh, no, yeah, no, that's way before my time.
Phil, you might do better in the next.
Nah, she's shaking her head at me.
I was going to say, this is Rosie's sweet spot, isn't it?
I'm just writing the team down now.
Yeah. He went off on 37 minutes with an injury.
Yeah.
Right, so no. So, Rosie, you have a go at naming a player from the lineup.
David Penny.
Correct.
I remember that because he broke the face of one of their players.
Scott, name a player from that lineup.
Gary Smart.
Correct.
Yes.
Andy, name a player.
Jimmy Jilton.
Correct.
Yes, scored.
Obviously, yeah.
Crazy.
I went with him.
Scored a penalty. Drawn a blank now, so I was going to say Jim Rigel. Les Robinson.
Correct. Scott?
Paul Key.
No, that is incorrect. Andy.
I'm now going through all of like the comedy 90s players that we've made reference to in recent years. John,
you'd be on safe ground. You'd be on safe ground, I think, for a lot of these. Yeah, it's quite a classic team.
John Dernan.
No, not that comedy. No, that's incorrect. Rosie?
Anton Rogan.
Correct. Another point. Scott?
It's so difficult because that period is so eclipsed by the Dennis Smith signings.
Yeah.
So it's like it's overshadowed this game. The pre-Dennis Smith team. Who would have played up front?
I'll just say we've spoken about nearly every player at some point on this.
Joey Beacham.
Correct. He was substituted off for Alex Dyer, but I couldn't tell you when because Rage Online don't have that information.
He's going to be my next guest.
Andy.
So I can't have Alex Dyer then. I don't know. Come back to me. You go, no, seriously, because it will take me forever to think of someone.
There are two or three legends left on there. So
yeah, I know. But the trouble is that because I went very sparingly in the 90s, so I don't know when anybody actually played for Oxford in the 90s.
Oh, fair enough. Rosie?
Chris Allen.
Correct. Scott?
Mike Ford.
Correct. Andy, you've got three more to choose from.
Three more to choose from.
A forward, a central midfielder, and a goalkeeper to go.
No, I'm gonna pass.
Was the goalie? Was it Paul Rees?
It was.
Oh.
It was brilliant. So yeah, Scott, your turn now. Two more to choose from.
So it's a striker and a midfielder. You saying?
One legendary, one not so.
We didn't have any legendary strikers pre Moody.
It's a striker, attacking player.
Oh, that's changed everything.
Well, I'm just, yeah.
I've noticed Rose is sitting forward. Andy's more defeated.
Well done.
Yeah, I'm feeling the same.
Well, I mean, I think I know. I thought I knew the striker until you said more attacking player. Now I'm not sure.
I'm going to pass.
Who do you think it was, Rosie?
Nick Cusack.
Correct. It's only because I Googled him, it said midfield, and I was thinking, oh no, I've made a huge error.
Not for us, it wasn't.
Okay. So.
Can I guess the last player?
Please do, because this is should be the most.
Is it Mickey Lewis?
It is, yeah.
Oh!
Well done. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 for Rosie. 3 for Scott. Do you want to try a buzz around?
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Which player scored a brace in that game? And it's Rosie buzzed in first.
I think it was Jim Magilton.
It was, correct. Very good. 7 days previously, we'd played Bristol City as well. But in which competition had we played them? That's Scott.
The auto windscreen shield.
No, that's wrong. Second to buzz was Andy.
Whatever the League Cup was called back then.
No, that's wrong as well. So, Rosie, do you know?
Anglo-Italian Cup?
It was.
It would be a shock if it was the Oxfordshire Senior Cup.
Mike Ford scored in the Anglo-Italian Cup game. So how many goals do you think he scored in total for Oxford United? Andy?
21.
Ooh. Rosie?
I put 9, but I think I've gone low.
And Scott?
17.
So Andy, that's quite brilliant. It was actually 22.
Oh,
was it really? Wow.
You get the point for that.
Well done. Thanks.
Scott is second.
I'm really surprised by that. Not that you got it right.
So, staying with the Anglo-Italian Cup game against Bristol City, who was the caretaker manager for that match? So, Rosie Buzz first.
Steve McLaren?
No, not according to Rage Online, I'm afraid. Next player to buzz was Scott.
I'm sure this is wrong. Ray Graydon. He was fired in 87.
Well, maybe he was just nothing to do that evening.
And did you want to have a guess?
Mike Ford.
No.
Can I have another? I don't want to point for it.
Yeah.
Was it Morris Evans?
It was Morris Evans, yeah. Who wasn't fired in 87. I reckon half a point for that.
He was fired in 88. Okay,
so by the end of that season, 93-94.
Is it a buzz around?
A buzz around, yeah. Who was our top scorer and how many did he score?
It was Paul Moody.
Rosie.
It was Paul Moody. And I think he scored 16.
That's not the answer I've got, I'm afraid.
Well, either of them.
No.
93-94. Yeah.
Scored a lot of goals towards the end of the season, didn't he?
Yeah. We only signed him in March, but he did end up.
Yeah.
I thought he ended up as
Are you? Bear with me.
Maybe not 16.
Well, according to Rage Online, the top scorer for the 93-94 season was John Byrne. With the whopping total of 9 goals.
You knew that as well.
So it was John Byrne, of course.
The season after and the season after that, Paul Moody was top scorer.
Yeah.
Should we have a buzz around?
They won't allow you back into John Byrne Club now, Rosie.
So. Oh, I know. I'm always telling you off for not mentioning John Byrne. Damn it.
So we'll have a buzz around. So Paul Moody was top scorer in the following two seasons. And he scored the exact same number in both seasons as well.
Whoa.
Andy was first to buzz.
Can you complete the question before I'm going to say he scored 16 goals in both seasons, each season.
No, that's incorrect, I'm afraid.
I copied what you
I
said.
Know. I don't know where I got the no.
Is it me next? 23.
Oh. No, not quite. Rosie?
I think it was 24.
Oh! 24 is the correct answer. So I probably shouldn't have taken a sharp intake of breath when I stopped was 1 hour. But, I mean, Rosie's pissing the whole thing anyway, so it doesn't matter. So this maybe then is a bit fairer. So what I've gone on to do is to look at Dennis Smith's first game in charge in his second spell. So this is from Saturday the 5th of February 2000. So again, do you want to write down the attendance, what you think the attendance was, and then the closest will get first dibs on naming a team member.
Who was the opposition?
Oh, beg your pardon.
I'm still going to plug a random number, whoever it was.
I don't know, I've printed it out, and for some reason that's the only bit of information that's printed out. Sorry, worst quiz ever.
I'm having a great time. I respectfully disagree.
Yeah.
Okay. 5th of February 2000, we were at home to Blackpool in the league.
I'm not copying you. written mine already.
Go on then, Andy, what have you put this time?
I put exactly the same number as the previous one, 5,369.
Interesting. Where's he?
I've gone for 6,029. But I think that's way too high.
And Scott?
4,731.
I just remember what season this is.
Yeah, and where Blackpool is.
But I got to do some maths, but Andy is the winner again. The actual answer was 5,179.
Wow. I'm sure I'm good at guessing.
So, yeah, so Scott was in second and Rosie third this time. Okay, so Andy, do you want to have first dibs on naming a player from the starting 11?
Steve Anthrobus.
Oh, I give you a point. He came on as a sub.
Damn. Get a point for
it. Okay, yeah.
Scott.
Richard Knight.
Incorrect, I'm afraid.
Oh, God.
Rosie?
I mean, they were all so bad. So what was it? What year was it? February 2000. Ian McGuckin.
No.
It is funny.
I think he was the season after, wasn't he? He was one of the amazing summer signings that year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What you might be.
Andy?
Paul Powell.
Ooh.
Correct. Done. Scott?
Andre Arense.
No.
Oh!
Oh, you've got a lot of bad goalies to get through. Les Robinson?
Correct.
That's because you brought that article up earlier and you left in that.
That's there are a few clues in that article, actually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, Andy again?
Joey?
Joey, yeah. Scott, do you want to name the goalkeeper from there?
Paul London.
Correct. Third time.
Andy Scott?
No, afraid not.
The summer signing, probably.
Think so. Andy?
I always get these two mixed up in my head because their surnames rhyme. Bolland?
No.
Folland.
You're very good at the substitutes that we use. Yeah, Rob Folland came on.
Folland or Bolland?
Folland, yeah. And Bolland mixed up.
What about Matt Holland?
No, I didn't get him mixed up.
You're thinking of Phil Bolland.
Yeah.
But I'll give you half a point for Rob Folland because I know who you meant. The other substitute has a name that rhymes with two Oxford. You know, two Oxford players have the same rhyming surname. Simon Weatherstone and Ross Weatherstone.
Derek Lilly.
Correct.
I was going to say Derek.
I love Derek.
Your favourite player.
Ever. Rosie.
Matt Murphy.
Correct. Yes. Andy. Midfielders.
Yeah, now I'm out of the obvious ones. I'm going to struggle now because I was actually at university that season. And so most of what I'm going on was who was left over for the following season.
So am I, to be fair.
Okay, fair enough.
Which wasn't many of these, I don't think, actually.
No.
Surprising.
Well, mainly due to Dennis Smith so being so pissed off in contract talks.
Yeah.
They went on holiday and never came back.
I think I'm going to have to tap out, I think. I'll see if the other two
Scott, got
any more shouts.
Okay.
I'll go for Phil Whelan.
Correct.
Jamie Cook?
No.
On by then?
Sorry. So I think one of these players, Smith, brought in like straight away, re-signed him straight away, and he started.
Steve Davis.
No, re-signed.
Well, he did re-sign Steve Davis, but it was later, I think. Anyway.
Sorry. Oh, sorry.
Did he?
Yeah, there was a really odd arrangement. He rejected a contract and then took a contract and then left again really quickly. Mm-hmm. It was really a just very strange summer.
Someone came into my head and they've gone again. Mark Watson?
Mark Watson's correct, yeah. That's very the good. Defence sorted.
So actually, to be fair, there's some fairly decent players in this.
This is the season before it all truly fell apart. Yeah. People like Watson then disappeared over that summer.
So we're missing two midfielders and a forward.
Are we just shouting out now?
Yeah.
Dean Whitehead?
No, sorry.
Ben Abbey?
No.
I can't really remember when he was here.
Are they obscure players? Or are they?
No, I wouldn't say so.
Chris Hackett?
No. These are more established professionals rather than youngsters.
Right, okay.
Peter Fear.
Peter Fear is correct.
What a disappointment he was. So what are we on now? Just a striker?
A striker and a midfielder.
Paul Tate?
Paul Tate's correct. So the striker, so it's according to Wikipedia, 3rd of February 2000, Smith's appointed manager, which would make 5th of February his first match. He said, he again goes on to say that they re-signed this player. But as I said, according to Rage Online, this player had already played a couple of games before here. And it's a striker. What can I say? We signed him from Ayr United.
From Ayr United?
Before that, he had signed from Forest.
A striker?
No, he hadn't signed from Forest. A striker? Well, he had played for Forest, but we actually signed him from Notts County. He played for us for two seasons, left, went to Bury, to Ayr United, and then re-signed for us for a second spell.
Nigel Jemson.
Correct.
No.
I'd never have had that as his career trajectory.
Do you know what? I had in my head that we were at the Kassam when we re-signed him, but I think that was just when he was playing for someone else.
Yeah, he came back. He played against us at the Kassam.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
And he got loads of grief from the fans. He scored twice and he was having the best day of his life.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was playing for Shrewsbury, wasn't he, at the time? Yeah. It was like his second game at the Kassam.
Yeah.
And he ran the game in the sense that he had the ref in his pocket all the way through it.
Mm.
We all went away going, what an arsehole, but I wish he was playing for us because he was brilliant.
As long as it was the first time he played for us and not the second.
Yeah.
The internet says he's an estate agent now.
Of course he is.
Right. What are we on now? Buzzers.
Buzzers. You.
Yep. Ready.
Buzzer ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So, same question as the last game. So, the game previous to Dennis Smith re-signing, who was the caretaker manager? Roses in first.
I think it was Mickey Lewis.
Correct. Okay. So, write this one down. So, across his two spells with us, how many goals do you think Nigel Jemson scored? Go on, Andy, you go first.
9.
Rosie?
24.
And Scott?
18.
So Rosie is the closest because he's actually 34.
Was it?
You ready for a buzzing question? Of those 34, how many were scored in his second spell?
I'm not just going.
Go on.
None.
Correct.
Not a single one.
Correct. Lazy. Absolutely bad. Fucking lazy.
You hate it when people call strikers lazy.
I love Gemma.
And a final question. 99-2000. Who was our top scorer and how many did he score? Rosie?
Matt Murphy, 7.
Matt Murphy is correct. I don't want to take a second guess. Andy, you buzz second, I think.
9.
No. Scott?
12.
I think it was like...
12's the nearest.
I think it was 19.
It was 17.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 17. So, yeah. And that is the end of whatever that was.
That was fun.
Do you want me to add some scores?
Yes, yes, please.
Do you want me to quickly do that? Okay, right. Bear with me.
One, two, three.
This is, that's literally what I'm doing.
Should we talk amongst ourselves?
Do you think I've won?
You might have to.
Maybe.
I reckon I've won.
Do you?
Yeah. Participation award.
What's the prize?
Pride.
Yes.
Bragging rights. At the end of the season, there will be a prize for the person who wins the most quizzes.
Oh, what is the prize?
The quizmaster. You get to be the quizmaster.
I was gonna say, you get to win the quizmaster. I'm not sure that that's, you know, very humane. Just
okay. So third place.
Head.
In third place, I've got Andy with 6 points.
Yes.
In second place, Scott with 9. And runaway winner with 17 points was Rosie.
Brilliant. Oh, well done.
The amount of points that Murphy scored.
Yeah. But that might not be right either.
I think it is. It sounds right to me.
Rosie, you definitely won. You definitely won. That was good. That was great. I shall hone my skills for next time.
Right.
Bedtime.
Yeah, it is bedtime, I think.